This episode is for the ladies. And there's only one way to impress the ladies. Click on the show notes and follow the link to our Brainbuster Tea Store where you can get Turnbuckle Boogie hoodies and t-shirts.
Yeah, and it's cold, so you should get one.
Sure, but
yeah, hoodie, yeah.
Mostly for the ladies.
Yeah, and for some of the dudes as well.
What?
Yeah, I want to be handsome.
Oh, sure.
Handsome man.
You want to make women faint and yeah. fellas jealous.
Yes. I want to make women faint and fellas palpitate.
Somebody make this guy the booker. He's full of hot ideas. Let's boogie.
I'm just happy I got to say palpitate.
Is that the first time you've mentioned that?
I think so.
What is palpitate?
I think it's like sweating. I don't know. It sounded good to say.
Palpitate? No, your heart palpitates.
Tates, yes, it beats, yeah.
That's right. Well, that makes more sense.
Yes.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Turnbuckle Boogie. I am pro wrestling historian Timothy Styles, and with me, my dear friend, professional wrestler, cutthroat, Cody Hancock. We're recording remotely.
Yes.
But from within the same valley. Isn't that yes. fun?
Yes, indeed. I am currently taking care of my wife, who recently had a procedure, and I'm ensuring that I'm around to help her get to where she needs to go.
Yeah, she had a surgery and is having a hard time standing, I guess. So yes. You got to be there to take care of her, which also means you're probably not hitting the gym as much. Maybe all you got a time to do is sit around and play whatever old wrestling game from the 1980s.
We actually, yesterday was a movie day. And in the meantime, since I'm not going to the gym, I am just stretching and doing some light yoga to try to get a little bit of mobility back. But
you can't just skip over it was movie day and not say what the movies were.
Oh, well, I was about to mention them. I know that we watched Terrifier. We watched the first Terrifier. Casey's never seen that, which was a lot of fun.
I've never even heard of it.
You would not like this movie. I'm going to point blank say that you're not going to like that movie.
Would I not like it because it's a horror movie or would I not like it because it's bad?
It's a horror movie. It's like, it's a new genre. You'd be happy to know that the Terrifier just has a sequel that's out in theaters. And it grossed, I think, $10 million at the box office so far. And
wow. It sounds like it probably cost $900,000 to make. So that's a bonus.
Oh, well, the first film was $35 to make. And it was limitedly released. And it's just a hyper-violent movie. I think that the genre is called Mega Slasher. So it's why ridiculous. Not?
No one's utilized the term gore porn yet, right? It's got to be a thing.
Well, speaking of gore porn, I also watched Ed Wood, who...
Oh, I love Ed Wood.
It's one of my favorite movies. You know, Casey had the Blu-ray, and I grew up with the DVD and the VHS tape, but the Blu-ray has deleted scenes on it. So I was super excited to rewatch that. And there was one more movie in there.
I love when Bill Murray is getting baptized and he goes, "Are you ready to give yourself over to God or whatever?" And he goes,
"Sure.
Sure."
Yeah, I reposted. I actually clipped that and I put that on Twitter because it's my favorite scene
right.
in the entire movie. Bill Murray in that movie was just killer. And I think there was one more movie that we watched. I just can't remember what it was, but Ed Wood and Terrifier were on the docket.
Well, can I mention a movie that you and I mentioned before I hit the record button? And I said, oh, I want to talk about this. In fact, you know, I'm already thinking about like, oh, are we doing a season four? And if we are, what is it going to be? At this point, I almost want to take a break from talking about wrestling.
Yes.
What would be a fun thing to do? How about wrestling movie reviews?
Yes. Yes.
We do Roadhouse. We do 13 Rounds Part 2.
Yeah.
Part 2.
What was it? The Bus Driver?
Yeah, the Chaperone. We do them all.
Yes, the Chaperone.
But
I would have a lot of fun with this. I think it's a good idea.
It would be a nice break for me because I got to tell you, but you know, we took a week off last week for people who are fans of the show, and the reason was because, I forget what it was on your side. You were busy.
I wasn't necessarily busy.
You had a cold.
I've had the same cold for the last 3 weeks, right. And I thankfully the benefit of me being at home is I have this nifty mute button that I can tap on the top of my microphone for whenever I'm like coughing out. So
right.
It's a little bit easier for me to cough at home than it is over there. But
right. Well, for me, my problem last week was like, I was like mad at the world of wrestling and I just didn't want to do a show.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, I do not want this show to be about bad vibes towards the wrestling world. So I'll take a break from wrestling for a week or so and hopefully come back with a more cheery disposition, which I feel I have.
Yeah.
But that leads us to, you know, eventually we're going to wrap this season up. We'll get to season four and fucking shit. If I can't watch bad movies all day.
Yeah.
And wrestlers make a lot of them.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. They do.
Piper, Punk.
They Live was a classic, man. Like,
yeah, but have you ever seen The Hell Comes to Frogtown? I never seen it.
No, I haven't seen it either.
It's supposedly good, but I mean, how can it be good with a name like Hell Comes to Frogtown? Anyway, the point is I would give my review of, hey, this movie with a stupid fucking name, pretty good.
Yeah. Don't judge a book by its cover.
But the reason why I brought this up is because you mentioned the wrestler, I think, before we hit record, and I started to fire up going, oh, and I said, you know what? Maybe I should hit record first. I fucking hate The Wrestler.
You don't like that movie?
I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate why? It. It's a fucking drag. It showcases some of it showcases a lot of the sad parts about professional wrestling, you know, from the sort of autograph signings to some of the dismalness of the independent wrestling scene to the sad fall from grace for people who might be once great, whether, you know, whatever. And on top of all that, I think that Mickey Rourke, his fingernails, he's got the steroid fingernails. You know, like Triple H has got where they wrap around like claws or some shit.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
You see him throughout the movie and it's like, what's up with this guy's fucking fingernails? It's because he's jacked up on the gas or whatever.
Yeah, man. I remember when the movie came out and I watched it with my ex, Wendy. She watched it one time and she's like, I can never watch this movie again.
Wasn't it made by the guy who made Requiem for a Dream?
Yeah, Darren Aronofsky.
Right. Also another fucking drag of a movie.
Oh,
ass to ass.
I love Darren Aronofsky films, but I'm kind of a drag as a human being. So I think that's why it resonates with me so much.
Well, you know, when I was in high school, I discovered that like I had a real problem with like depression, you know, as most people do in high school. I can't get the girl. I'm a loser. Woe is me. And what turned that around for me is I started exclusively absorbing comedies. It was either stand-up comedy or comedy movies. I really just got into comedy. And I just don't make a habit of watching dramas. But here we are, a movie about wrestling, and I love wrestling. I'm going to watch this shit. It's not a bad movie. It's just a fucking bummer.
Yeah. I can understand where you're coming from because I also was very geared towards comedy. I grew up watching sketch comedy, SNL, Kids in the Hall.
Right.
I also enjoyed stand-up comedy. But I think that there are,
even all those horror movies you like are comedies. Freddy Krueger is like he's like who's that guy who used to play the violin and tell the one-line jokes from the fucking Catskills? Oh, I can't think of it. Take my wife, please. Anyway, that's Freddy Krueger.
Well, welcome to primetime, bitch. I'm a very, very big fan of anything that makes me feel some type of emotion, whether it be happiness or anger or sadness, like anything that can like really reach inside. So even though like some of my favorite films, like Dumb and Dumber, is one of my favorite films, but also if we're going to talk about Jim Carrey, I am also a really big fan of Requiem for a Dream, but Eternal Sunshine.
Oh,
for
the stop Spotless it.
Mind.
Oh, you did much better than I thought you would do. Yes. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is a great movie.
Yes. It's a fantastic film, but it's sad. It's a sad movie.
Well, I don't cut dramas out of my life completely. It's just that I have to, it's like taking your medicine. If you take too much of one, I'll start getting the shakes.
Yes. I agree with that.
Or I'll start feeling bummed out, especially with like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is a romantic drama.
Yes.
You know, and being that growing up, being that kid who probably looked to film to fill in the gap of the absence of romance in my youth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I did have girlfriends. I wasn't a complete loser, just for to let people know. But it was not as much as I wish it were.
Yeah.
But watching that movie, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
It's just like, especially, I mean, the girl had like radical colored hair, you know, which I'm big into when they got wild colors of hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm into that. Scott Pilgrim's my jam.
Oh, Scott Pilgrim versus the World was an amazing film as well.
Yeah.
And I think that it's anything that makes you feel something, man, I'm a fan of, just as long as it's done well. And I think that being in the professional wrestling industry, when we talk about the wrestler, I think that it's a precautionary tale. And, you know, if you have to be smart if you get that opportunity. And if you don't play your hand right, you can end up fucking trying to hang out with the stripper, you know. That
I think you probably watched it and you were like, I relate to Necro Butcher.
Yes. You know, what's funny,
stapling dollar bills to your eyelids.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is that I actually, Ring of Honor did a show in Vegas at the Empire Ballroom, and it was the first time I'd ever seen Necro Butcher wrestle live. And
I would say we're using the term wrestle for Necro Butcher rather loosely.
Necro
I'm not Butcher, talking shit. Just saying you're not going to see any extended headlocks in a Necro Butcher match.
No, but he smelled like a,
like he looks
genuine homeless person. And so when I saw that, and then I like saw him in The Wrestler, I was like, oh man, this is fantastic.
Right.
And
sure,
I think that this is
just to give context too, Necro Butcher, like it's like a quick backstage thing where like it pans around the locker room.
Yes.
And everyone is, you know, sitting around, they're going over their matches or whatever. And it cuts to Necro Butcher and he's, I don't know, reading some sort of highfalutin novel. Am I correct?
Yes. Yes, you are.
We have another caller online. If you could please state your name and your question, please.
Hey, Amy. This is Matt Hardy. The question I'd like to ask you is,
is this Matt Hardy? Do we have confirmation?
Is this Matt Hardy?
This is?
Sounds like Matt to me, and it really shouldn't surprise me at this point.
Yeah, it actually is Matt Hardy, yeah. If you need a little confirmation to prove it, how about the same place where I showed up and embarrassed you this Monday night in Newark. Newark is also the same place you told me you loved me, Amy. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
The first time. You need more confirmation?
No, Matt. Go ahead. What's up?
No, go ahead. I'm going to give you a chance, considering, you know, I have talked to you here and there, but I haven't talked to you since everything has really, really went down. But I want to hear you explain yourself. Go ahead. I want to hear from you. I want to hear from the horse's mouth.
What would you like to know, Matt? Because as I know, I'm sure you've been listening to this entire show, because if it is if it's online, it's on in your house. I know that much.
Well, the first thing I want to say is, like, how did it feel to see me Monday?
I don't know if it was so much seeing you that I didn't like, but I didn't really like seeing you blindside my boyfriend and attack him. But that was awfully sweet of you.
Well, if you thought that was sweet of me, believe me, your life is only starting to become miserable. And Adam Copeland, your boyfriend, the love of your life, his life is only starting to become miserable. Because Monday was the very first day in my movement. And my movement will be to get retribution on you and against that piece of feces, Adam Copeland, and against the WWE, more specifically the office of the WWE, Johnny Ace, and all the other that fired me.
That's great. Are you done with your wrestling promo that you just cut?
Oh, no, actually I'm not. I've got plenty more wrestling promos to do.
Great.
And I've got plenty of things to discuss with you. So go ahead, why don't you tell me exactly, why is it you're more in love with Adam Copeland than me? Why did you throw away 6 good years? Why'd you flush that down the drain?
Matt,
especially considering this guy has been married twice and he's run over every woman he's been with, what makes you think you're so special? What makes you think you're different?
I don't know that I need to tell you about my relationship with...
I think you owe it to me, considering I've given you 6 good years of my life, and I probably loved you more than anyone else would love you.
No, I'm saying I don't think that I owe you an explanation of my relationship with Edge. Although I can tell you about why I don't want to be with you. You cutting wrestling promos in a personal context could be one excuse that I could tell you.
Okay, great. Great. Well, you know, you are the reason that I'm cutting wrestling promos, and you are the reason why I showed up Monday night, and you are the reason all this began.
I don't understand why that's my issue, that you've chose to act out this breakup that happens every day, just not on camera and not in a public forum, that you've chose to act out this way. You've chose to rally your MFers because somehow having your MFers behind you makes it a lot better and easier to deal with, and somehow more right, and you're more vindicated because I fell in love with somebody else, and because you have a lot of MFers, somehow that equals, I don't know. I haven't quite put the two together, but...
Well, the reason why it's public is because we're public people. We're public wrestling celebrities. And we were a lot more than just a couple, Amy. We were also a working couple. We'd worked together in the WWE for many years. And of course you knew, getting involved in a relationship with another worker, a guy who claimed to be one of my best friends. You know, they say in this business, you know, you only have, like, the number of friends, true friends that you have, you can count on one hand. And I would have considered Adam one. And considering that you would go out and fall in love and have an affair with him about, you know, behind my back and lie every step of the way, I definitely think that makes things a public issue, especially when that's going to come out. Come on. We're on TV. We're on worldwide. We're in every country in the world. And considering the power of the Internet, that was going to be out, and I was going to defend myself.
Because I didn't
do anything wrong.
You didn't do anything wrong. And the reason it was out is because you put it out there. That's why it's out there, and that's why it became public knowledge. I think if people were being mature adults in the situation, it wouldn't have got where it was. And I mean, obviously you were the driving force behind that, wanting to make sure, saving face by rallying these troops behind you. It doesn't compute to me. I don't understand it. People think differently. People are going to solve problems differently, but dealing with it amongst ourselves, I think, would have been conducted a lot more effective means for trying to work out differences and work out things. Obviously, you know, we were together for a long time. I had never been with anybody else. This thing just happened with Edge out of nowhere. I didn't mean for it to happen. Yes, I went about it wrong, but it's not that I just out of nowhere did this. And I mean, the two of us needed to sit down and talk, not be ranted on the Internet.
Matt, can I jump in with a quick question? A lot of people are asking.
Make it quick.
Do you really feel that Edge should have been fired over you?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me go back and I'm getting ready to get to that. I'm going to put everything in perspective. It's funny how you feel so justified because of this feeling. I mean, what would have been right? Any time this creep would have put some kind of move on you would have been go home and tell me, but you didn't do that. So every time after that, it was intentional. And no, I'm not the one who started all this story. The story would have been out as soon as you and Edge would have been, you know, hanging out and doing your thing once word got out and I found out about it. And I definitely wasn't going to think people that I was, I wasn't going to let people think that I was treating you bad in this relationship, because I never did. I treated you good as gold, and there's no denying that. And as far as the whole Matt getting fired and not Edge, I mean, you've got a guy, I'll tell you, John Laurinaitis, Johnny Ace, that's what everybody calls him. He's the guy who's the head of talent relations right now. I was ready to make a comeback. I'd rehabbed. I was supposed to be out 8 to 9 months with my left knee. I had it totally reconstructed. I was ready to come back in 6 months because I busted my ass to rehab my injury and come back for a wrestling company that I love with everything I am, that I've sacrificed everything I've had over the last 7 years. And you guys know that, TLC matches, ladder matches, table matches, whatever it may be. And I was ready to come back. I was in Greenville, South Carolina, working out. I was in the ring actually working out with one of my buddies, Crazy K, and I got a phone call from Johnny Ace. And at this point he said, well, Matt, just want to tell you, he said, we're going to have to release you. Creative really doesn't have anything for you. We don't have anything. We're gonna, I was going, Johnny, I don't buy into that. You're going to release me because Creative don't have anything for me? You're telling me this doesn't have anything to do with my situation? No, it doesn't have anything to do with my situation, not at all. And one, I think Johnny Ace has a personal vendetta against me. And two, considering I was the guy that was the victim of this whole thing, I mean, Adam Copeland was a guy that was married. He was committing adultery, having an affair with my girlfriend. Those two were in the wrong. And the company, the WWE, was going to endorse that and fire me while I was at home with an injury? That is absolute How can that be justified? The thing is, Adam Copeland, The Edge, that's the guy that should have been fired. They should have sent him home, and they maybe should have sent you home too, Amy. Especially with the way you are. The whole reason, I think Monday night I came out there and I called him Adam because that's all I know him as. And I didn't even call you Amy because the Amy Dumont I know, that girl, she's dead. She's gone. Lita's all I know. This hanging out with Edge, that's all I know now. I don't even know who Amy Dumont is anymore.
Okay, and so why should I want to be with you after a rant like this? And
well, I'll tell you what, I don't want to be with you either. The whole thing is, I'm the kind of person, I'm vindictive. I'll tell you that right now. And if you screw over Matt Hardy, believe me, I will make your life miserable. You did that to me because I looked at you on the same level as myself. I mean, actually, wrestling is all I've known. It's all I've loved my entire life. And then it came to a point where I loved you more than wrestling. I put you first, and I put my career second. In case people don't know this, I was on SmackDown. I was in the midst of the best time I'd ever had as a singles wrestler in my career. The whole reason I came to Raw was to be with this girl, Amy Dumont, to be with Lita on TV so it wouldn't mess up our schedule, so it wouldn't mess up our relationship. And coming over there did nothing for me. It was a career killer, and part of it was your fault because you got heat when I got over there. And then I came over there for you, just for our relationship, because relationship was number one to me, wrestling was second. When I was out hurt, though, it seems to you that our relationship didn't mean anything. Wrestling was first to you, and then even your relationship with Edge became first to you. So now, because you've done that, I'll get retribution against you, I'll get retribution against Adam, and I'll also get retribution against that company, because I am the kind of person, I don't just like, people don't run over me, and then I lay down and die. If people run over me, I will get up and I will massacre them. I will dismantle them. And you have no idea. You know what it's like to be my closest ally and have me do anything for you, and you're going to see what it's like to be my worst enemy. And
I read already, Matt.
Good.
Thank you.
Well, just to reiterate, because I know you're not too up on your internet, on your internet sites, and you're not too up on your articles and whatnot. So just so you know, I want to warn you before I come.
Anyway, today we're talking about professional wrestler Lita.
Yes, indeed. Miss Congeniality.
You know, it's funny. I think she was only like Miss Congeniality for like a couple of spots in ECW, right?
Yeah, it was a brief period of time.
Because the funny thing is, I mean, I remember watching ECW a lot. I never remembered her being there.
I remember her being there because I remember I paid attention to what Danny Doring was doing a lot.
Yeah, Dangerous Danny Doring. He was in the tag team with Roadkill, right?
Yes.
Right.
Which made no sense whatsoever.
None at all. But they were over, brother.
They were great. Yeah, I was a big fan of Danny Doring and Roadkill.
And it was like late ECW too, right? Because really she didn't start wrestling till like 99, something crazy like that.
Yep.
Which in retrospect was like, oh, really? I feel like I remember her being in there much earlier, but nope.
Oh yeah, no, she I remember she had a brief feud with Don Marie, and then not long after that she was on WWE television with S.A. Rios.
Right.
Yeah.
How is S.A. Rios? How would you qualify him.
Oh, I thought he was great.
Yeah.
I thought Eso Rios was an amazing luchador for sure.
You know who I didn't think was great? Vince McMahon, for sticking a girl who's never said a fucking word before to, hey, go out there and be this guy's fucking mouthpiece.
Yeah. Yeah.
He don't speak too good English. You speak for him.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Have mercy.
Well, and I remember the way that Lita was used with S.A. Rios.
How was she used?
As a valet that would end up getting involved in matches by doing like a Hurricanrana or a moonsault, and then it would result in S.A. Rios being able to pick the bones after that.
Right.
And she was spectacular with her aerial stuff. Her moonsault always scared the shit out of me, but she hit it, you know, like consistently. And yeah, it was, I remember just the transition from her, from S.A. Rios to the Hardy Boys and Team Extreme. It was just the cargo pants with the whale tail. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Dude, first of all, let me say this. There was nothing stranger than seeing Michael Hayes wearing that Hardy Boys outfit out there with him, like, all right, boys, go get him. Yeah, with the cane. It's like, what the fuck is he wearing that velvet shirt and those JNCO jeans for?
Yeah.
Oh, he looks so out of place.
The skin tight velvet shirt with the little tiny barbed wire tribal arm cuff.
Oh, so weird. And the minute she stepped in, it was like perfect. Package complete. Now, yep. I gotta say, I'm not a fan of the name Team Extreme. I mean, they're already called fucking Matt and Jeff Hardy. They're the Hardy Boys.
Yes.
Team Extreme's pretty lame.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everything had to be extreme with an X.
Yeah.
You know,
the late 90s.
You gotta drink blue sports drink and everything has to be to the extreme.
Speaking of the late 90s, my daughter walked in here the other day to the studio and she goes, Dad, there's a music festival and I really want to go. And there's a band that is playing that I know you would like. And I was like, I don't know who this would be. And she goes, okay, we both like them. I was like, I don't know. Who is it? She goes, System of a Down. Now, normally, that's fucking big time news. Like, wow, System of a Down's going to be playing?
Yeah.
You don't get a whole lot of opportunities to see System of a Down play anymore.
No.
The problem is I looked at the lineup of this festival. I mean, there must be 50 bands, and every one of them, it's like someone got a hold of MTV's playlist from 1999. It's like Korn, Chevelle, POD. I was like, oh my God. Hey, I would rather fucking sit on my own balls than drag a fucking 11-year-old to this shit.
There was a few people on that lineup, specifically Mr. Bungle. I would want to go see Mr. Bungle live.
Mr. Bungle is there?
Mr. Bungle will be there, yes. And as well as Placebo.
What about
Failure?
Hoobastank.
I don't know about Hoobastank. I would rather watch Failure than Hoobastank. But no, that's actually a really good lineup, but the tickets are way out of range for anything that I'd be willing to partake in that is not going to guarantee that I have food.
Well, supposedly my wife can get me tickets. And I was like, I don't want to go to this shit. You fucking take her. God damn. I like System of a Down, but not sit through 6 hours of some of the worst shit in history.
Yeah, well, there's some bad bands there, but I think that there's a few on there that I would warrant seeing.
Sure. Most people like Incubus, but I don't.
Hell yeah.
Well, anyway, so Lita, she has a really interesting story because, you know, a lot of people have interesting tales about how they got into the industry. You know, some of them have written books about it. I mean, this gal, for people who don't know, I think just caught a flight from Florida or wherever she was living at the time to Mexico and just walked in and said, I want to be a wrestler, just because she saw Rey Mysterio once.
Yep.
And that was it. And they were like, yeah sure. All you got to do is, I'm sure she had to pay. But she worked in CMLL for a little bit before she went back to the States. It's so crazy that some white chick from Florida would be like, I want to be a luchador. And then just fucking, she clearly is someone who's like a free spirit.
Oh, yeah. And that's the, if you want something, do it. And right. I think that it's cool to see, because she recently, I think, came back for the Women's Royal Rumble last year. And that was like a cool little throwback. And I think that skill wise, she got better on the job.
Yeah.
But it was a cool period of time to see people. I remember the first time I saw Trish Stratus. Like, she's not really going to be that much of anything. And then you see her progress. And when you get to see that amount of growth and development, it lets you, like, right now, I think Logan Paul is like the greatest thing going, because you can tell that he gives a shit.
Right.
Right. And Lita was somebody that obviously gave a shit. And you can feel that when you see it.
I like the rest, you know, it's like me, when I listen to music, I'm listening for harmonies. I'm listening for the tone of the fuzz pedal. I'm listening for, what time signature is this in? Oh, interesting. The phrasing length. These are the things I think about. You see Trish Stratus and you go, boy, she's getting better. I see Trish Stratus and I become a werewolf. I'll become overwhelmed with toxic masculinity. Oh,
so
my God.
You become a Tex Avery cartoon.
I become a lycanthrope, brother. It's a full moon out whenever me and Trish Stratus are anywhere near each other.
One of my favorite animated shorts was Red Hot Riding Hood from Tex Avery. That's where the wolf with the bulging eyes and the tongue out of the mouth comes from.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Well, and not to sell Lita down the river, bro. She's a piece of work too. Unbelievable. When I was, what year? So let's say 2000, I was probably 20 years old.
Yep.
Brother.
Prime time.
She is unbelievable. And the fact that you got to see her underwear every week was a bonus.
I was just about to say the whale tail was something that, you know, normally you had to put on a lot of work and effort to try to see a lady's underpants.
Right. She gave it out for free.
Yeah. And it was just a peekaboo, right?
Yeah, you know, that's all.
I think that the whale tail is one of the most tasteful bits of displaying undergarments that we've ever seen.
Yeah, it doesn't really showcase anything, but it does let you know she does have something in her ass.
Yeah. Yes.
Not in her ass, but in her ass crack. It must be hard to work with, too. I guess that's not true. There's probably a lot of dudes that wear like G-strings under their thing.
Oh, my God. You know, I have a funny story about that, actually.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So I... Normally, you don't see what I have on display, but there was a match that I did, and the camera angle hit just right, mm-hmm. and you could completely make out every single line of my manhood. So I got extremely self-conscious, and I'm like, well, fuck, man, I gotta go get a G-string.
Yeah, you don't want people knowing the cut of your dork.
Yes. So, and I went down, and in order to get a banana hammock, you know, you have two options. You can either order one discreetly on the internet, which I can imagine would be the smart way to do it, or you can go to a sex shop.
Yeah, you can do what you do. Hello, good sir. I'm here to buy something to put betwixt my butt cheeks.
Precisely. And I ended up having to get Andy Delgado, who is one of the students under the learning tree, and it's show day and I need to get this now, you know, I can't get it shipped and wait.
Wow. So that's by the way, I'll say, if I were with you, I'd go, maybe break it in around the house first. Don't wait till you get in the ring and try to break it in. You're going to end up with an ass crack rash or something crazy.
Well, unfortunately, time did not permit, sir. and it was a
just
snap
you didn't
decision.
Want people to see your wiener.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if they asked nicely, it'd be different, but you know, like it wasn't on display.
Right.
Know what I'm saying? Like, it's not for sale. So we go into this sex store, and I just have to tell Andy, I'm like, hey, dude, I'm sorry. This is going to be kind of weird, but we're going to have to go into this this sex store in order for me to get a G-string to wear tonight for the show, because I don't want people to see the outline of my penis. And we walk into the sex shop. And there's a guy and a gal behind the counter.
Oh, boy.
And I have to basically tell them, hello, good sir and good ma'am. I am here with no nefarious means, but I need to have something that will discreetly display my manhood.
Sure. A guy with shaved arms and shaved legs. Yes, I'm looking for a G-string. All right, you pervert. Right this way.
Yeah. So, and then as I'm going, like, they show me where it is, and then I'm looking at them, okay, well, this seems like the right one. And as I'm going,
what do you base that on? My nugget fell out of this one.
I based it on color. So I got the black one, and there was a couple different options, and I got the one that didn't have an opening for my junk to fall out of. How about that? So as I'm going up to the counter, there's a new dude, and I walk into this conversation, and the third gentleman was upset because he was the mop guy for the porno theater.
Oh.
And he was complaining about the night shift. And he's this little tiny Filipino guy, and he has gloves on as he's throwing his arms up in the air. And he is like, Frank cleans nothing. Frank leaves me with everything. Frank cleans nothing. It is not my job to clean Frank's work. And I'm just fucking cracking up because I am walking in on this dude complaining about the amount of jizz that he has to clean.
It's and so disturbing. There's a rule. If you drop a quarter, don't pick it up. It's lost.
I don't think it's lost. It's found. It's just not moving.
I once made out with a chick in one of those booths.
Really?
Yeah, because it was her birthday. She said, I'd never been to Showgirl Video. And I said, oh, okay, well, I'll go with you, I guess. And I was trying to hook up with her. This is the last girl I ever hooked up with before my wife, by the way. And we went into that booth, and it was awkward. Anyway, we ended up making out and other things. I'll leave it there. All the while, the girl on the other side of the glass was pressing her butthole up against the glass. So it was romantic from the start.
Absolutely.
It's a shame it didn't work out.
Well, as long as there's a thick enough piece of fiberglass there or plexiglass, you know that you're not going to get pink eye.
Right.
So, delicious.
You might not know well when you look her in her eyes. She's lived a lifetime watching herself die.
I mean, of course, the big crack is that, hey, pro wrestling, a bunch of, you know, mostly naked dudes all rolling around on the ground with each other. Pretty gay.
Yes.
Brother, you don't know the half of it. They got to shave each other's ass cheeks. They're wearing G-strings.
Yeah.
Gets awkward in the locker room.
Nick Bugatti used to be my designated back shaver.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he made it very awkward anytime he did it.
Back doesn't seem as homoerotic.
Yeah. Well, I can shave my own ass.
Right.
I'm a grown man.
And what does that say about the guys like Cesaro, where they got, like, you know, they have hair around their legs and stuff? It's like, what is this guy, a homophobe?
Or either that or it's, I have to time out shaving my legs so delicately. Uh-huh. Because if I don't, I get really bad razor burn. I wouldn't be surprised if the dude's just tired of having fucking razor burn.
Sure. Well, no, nothing is worse than when I was a kid, I went to Wet n' Wild. And there was this lady whose bathing suit could not hold in all her pubes. And as a kid, you see something like that, like, oh my God, there's an afro coming out of every which away this lady's underoos.
Oof. Oof.
Anyway, leader.
If she was a redhead, she'd be smuggling Ronald McDonald.
Sure. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Lita, it's really interesting. She excelled as a wrestler, I think, despite the fact that she had the breast implants and all the sort of, you know, because it was during a time where the lion's share of these girls were, they were just sex objects. And she had, she was one of the few that had the respect of the fans. And, you know, look, just knowing how she got into the business by taking her ass to fucking Mexico City and jumping right into CMLL after training down there, uninvited, by the way.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, this girl wants to be a worker. I think more people, more women today owe her a serious debt of gratitude, more than anyone, maybe with the exception of like Mildred Burke and shit like that, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's something that, I mean, not just women could take something from that, but grown-ass men could take something from that as well. You know, like if you take initiative and if you say that you're going to do something, fucking do it. Like, and that's the thing is that I think a lot of people need to learn, if don't say it if you ain't going to do it, you know?
Yeah. I legitimately wonder that, let's say today it would be a bad idea because I'm 44, but let's say today I said, I want to be a pro wrestler, but I don't want to fucking train at any sort of modern westernized school. I want to go to the New Japan Dojo. And if I bought myself a plane ticket and flew right to Tokyo and said, I'm here to be a pro wrestler, or at least beat bump me till I fucking can't walk anymore, or do those drills where I got to stand on my head and walk around my own body and all that shit.
Yep.
Let's get it on. I wonder what they would say. Like,
well, it depends, you know. Liger, his story is pretty similar. He attempted to sign up to New Japan's dojo and they turned him away because of his size.
Right.
They're like, you're way too small. We can't take you. And then he showed up again. And finally they're like, okay, well, you're not going to go anywhere, so I guess we'll let you in. And it, like I said, there's a level of tenacity that comes along with that, that commands respect.
Yeah, I agree. But it also, it's so important that if you're going to get in this industry that you really study. Like, there are plenty of tomes, you know, autobiographies and biographies and podcasts and any number of sort of informational outlets where you can find out how people got into the industry and the lengths that they went through to get there. And I don't know why anybody would be, you know, maybe they watched AEW this week and go, I want to be a pro wrestler, and jump in but not absorb any of that shit. That would be the first thing I would do, is get every single book that's ever been written and read it from cover to cover every day.
Yeah. Or, and And thankfully, especially with the internet now, that information is a lot, it's easier to obtain, you know, like that's another thing too, is that Lita was able to find out where she needed to go in Mexico specifically to knock on the door.
Right. Before smartphones.
Yes. Before GPSs and smartphones and shit like that, you know, right. Like it's a really cool story.
These were like analog cell phones during that time where you got like where the bars were legit analog bars.
Yep.
And not everyone had a computer in their house.
No.
I don't think I had a computer until, well, probably recently.
My granddad was always kind of a technology guy, and we had a computer that I was not allowed to touch throughout the entirety of me growing up until I got to be about 15.
Yeah.
And I think he cycled through 3 computers.
Mm-hmm.
But my access to the internet was extremely limited. And I
so was everyone's.
Yeah. I ended up inheriting his I think 2nd computer, and I brought that to my mom's, and that was in the day and age when you had the little tiny AVI files, or I think they were, God, they weren't AVI and it wasn't MPEG, but they were, the video files were very, very crude and they would take forever to download.
Right.
But I was able to.
And there was only 3 websites, Pepsi.com.
Yeah. Yep.
It would take 5 hours to load that one page. He would watch the Pepsi logo slowly building. Ooh.
Yeah.
I wonder what they're going to say.
And I just remember like finding videos, like little tiny video clippets of wrestling, and just having to constantly download them, watch them, delete them, and then download new ones and watch them and delete them because I didn't have enough space on my computer. It was a, fuck, man, people don't know how
good they have it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you remember MapQuest? And you used to have to like print shit out. You needed a fax machine.
Buddy, I'm older than you. I used to have the Thomas Guide. Now, that's some old school brother shit where you just like, I need to get from LA to Las Vegas.
Go to the gas station.
You pull out this book that's coil bound and you get out the highlighter and you go, okay, I got to get from here and switch over to this freeway or whatever. That's how you do it.
Yep.
So, but here's an interesting question, actually. You're obviously, I didn't mention, but you're a trainer at FSW out here in Las Vegas.
Yes, sir.
Do you ever, I'm sure you tell people you should watch tape of this. Here, watch this tape. But do you ever say, here's your fucking homework for the week, read this book, or give them any sort of stuff outside of, you know, like business stuff?
It depends on who it is. It's not information that I give broadly of go and read this book. But if somebody has a conversation with me, like I'll tell them, like, you should probably end up reading Dynamite Kid's book. You should end up reading Mick Foley's book. You should end up reading Bret Hart's book. I bring up Foley's book a lot because
it's the Bible.
Yeah. And especially when people are having a hard time switching that gear to where you have to be physical with another person, because you don't want to hurt anybody. But at the same time, there is a point where you have to say, fuck it. I have to have very little regard for myself or the other person involved in this function, because there's something to be accomplished here.
Right.
And he was talking about that in the Kawasaki death match. I can't remember the wrestler he was wrestling, but he talked about putting a barbed wire board over him before he dropped the cactus elbow off the ring apron. And he mentioned that it was the first time in his life that he like kind of lost himself in the moment of like, I don't fucking give a shit. I have to do this.
Right.
And especially when it comes to physicality. So I'll mention that specifically, but it's kind of case in case basis.
Right.
You know, like if somebody tells me, oh yeah, you know, like I'm struggling working two jobs at once. And it's like, okay, well, fucking pay attention to doing this, 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 and this.
Right.
This is a way that you can make a little bit of extra money, things like that. So there's no like broad overall, like I'm not going to start a class of like, sometimes the classes reach upwards to 25 people.
Right.
They paid money to get in the ring. And there's moments where like something will happen and then it'll change the course of what we're doing in the day. And it's like, you need to pay attention to this.
Sure.
You need to watch this.
But you
need
say,
to do this.
But you say they pay to get in the ring, but ultimately aren't they really paying for an education? And, you know, if let's say I were running a class and I'm not.
Yeah.
It would be required reading that everyone had to read Have a Nice Day by Mick Foley.
Right.
As it is a tale of ultimate sacrifice. And, you know, it's a great tale of a protagonist overcoming the odds and being not a douchebag on the way up.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's the thing is that unfortunately you're talking about a scenario of leading a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah. And that's
I suppose I would treat it like a classroom.
Right.
There'd be a fucking book report or a test. And if you don't pass.
Oh, I've absolutely, there was moments where I actually did try doing that. And for about four people that attended, they got a lot out of it. But there's a lot of people that aren't wired to digest information that way. So what I have to do as a trainer is I have to find out how they are able to digest the information that I'm giving them. And there's some people that just won't get it because they don't give a shit.
Right.
They don't care.
Isn't that heartbreaking though? Cause you know, it's like go ahead.
Not anymore. It's not heartbreaking anymore. And it used to be heartbreaking. And it wasn't until recently that I realized that I can't help people that aren't willing to help themselves.
Right.
Right.
I'm saying it's heartbreaking that it's like, there are plenty of people who are like, ooh, this looks like fun and I can make some cheddar and get on TV or whatever. And they do it, but they don't go as far as the person next to them. It's like, do you like this or do you fucking love it? Because if you just like it, you could piss up a rope. There's plenty of people around here who love it, who would be willing to read a fucking Encyclopedia Britannica, you know, series of tomes of information just to get an education, not only on what's going on today, but the history of it. Because the more people understand the history of it, the more they have a chance to be successful.
Well, but there's also some people that are not on the pursuit of knowledge.
Right.
There's some people that are on the pursuit of instant gain, right? And it's like, oh no, I'm just going to do this and this is going to lead into a direction that is going to make me happy and fulfilled in life.
Right.
I have always been on the pursuit of knowledge. And that's why every day I'm digesting wrestling in some form.
Right.
And that's the one thing is that when there's that many people in a room, if I force them to do something that they do not want to do, they are not going to want to be in that room. So what I do when I teach is I try to cater to every single person that walks through the door.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'm able to team rah-rah into this is what we're doing today. But I've often found that when it turned, I made a DVD. That was the history of the evolution of spots in professional wrestling. And I started from a match between, I believe, Ricky Dozen and the Grappler that took place in the 60s. I did a match from the 70s. I did a match from the 80s. I did a match from the 90s. I did a match from the 2000s. And then I did an AEW match. And I spent a long time like putting this together, and I did picture in picture commentary for it.
Right.
And it was very insightful.
Sorry, Cody just hit this mute button so he can cough.
My apologies.
In the middle of a sentence.
There was out of the 11 DVDs that I handmade, right? Uh-huh. And I brought it to the school. There was three people that watched it. And that's when I was done. You know, right. Like, I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing this shit anymore.
Yeah. Well, lesson learned. You did all the effort. You have, I don't know. I suppose it is a school.
Yes.
And I feel that a professional wrestling school is more than, or it should be, more than bumps. It should also be.
Oh, yeah.
It should be maneuvers, discipline, the business, travel. And it should be, you know, and I would probably, I'd go, all right, here's your homework assignment. In 1 month's time, you have to write me at least a one-page paper, one page,
right,
on Mick Foley's first book, Have a Nice Day. Now, if you really wanted to be a wrestler and you couldn't make it through that book, I would have some serious questions. Because right. That shit you could probably knock out in a few sittings, because one, it's well written and yes. very entertaining. And two, it's the very fucking thing you want to do. And this is a guy who had no business doing it.
Right.
Getting ahead. Now, if you don't want to read that, you're just a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
And at least I would know that at the end of the month when you went, I didn't write a paper. What the fuck are you even doing here?
You know, while I look back at a lot of your career, we'll get some into a little bit of the rated R stuff, but not dwell there. You were placed in some of the most difficult situations I've ever seen anybody placed in. Would you agree, or would say, Steve, you're completely wrong?
Oh, man, yeah, I would agree.
But you always weathered the storm and made it through. Maybe not that you wanted to, but you did. And I've always thought you were tough and cool, and, you know, we've had our friendship. I was like, if anybody's earned her stripes, it's you.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely, especially during this time, days that it was hard to get on the plane to come to work. Because I'm like, you're willingly participating in this very, like, stressful situation.
And yeah, put across as family entertainment.
Yes, yes.
But that, you know, you got to laugh about it, I guess, in retrospect. But that was where we were at that time mm-hmm. in the business.
Yeah.
But despite the circumstances, when you and Edge got together, there was a lot of heat. The storyline with Edge actually, and the blow up with Matt just caused you a lot of personal grief.
Oh, yeah.
It was like you're trying to entertain and this relationship comes out and the crowd, the vitriol towards the crowd really kind of turns into the wrong kind of heat
yeah.
against you. And it's unfortunate that the heat crossed the line, but, you know, there's no doubt about it. You guys had a ton of steam and heat to go. Bottom line, you know, that run with Edge, y'all were in basically, you know, almost every single segment of very heavy-duty stuff, whether it's men or women, y'all were a main part of Raw.
Yeah, I mean, so it took us a minute to sink into that rated R couple because it was very foreign to us, and it was, like, during this, like, totally crazy time for us personally. But besides Trish, Edge is who we had the best telepathy with. All we had to do was shoot each other a glance. We knew right where we needed to be, what we needed to do. And because our characters were so over the top, gross, and gratuitous,
yeah.
we liked to like gross each other out, see how far we could push our obnoxious characters. And it worked. And once we got there, then we were off to the races.
And then there's people that, once again, like, I also am sympathetic to some people because there's a lot of people in today's day and age that do not retain information the way that you or I do.
Right.
And there's some people, like, admittedly for me, I have read Mick Foley's book. I digest information visually and audibly better than I do written form.
Right.
So I'm not going to bend anybody's arm back,
right?
But I will recommend it. Like I think I even recommended it before. If somebody asks me, like new students will always ask me, well, what can I do to practice outside of here? Can I be doing roles on like grass and stuff like that? And I immediately tell them no.
I'm like, except Mick Foley did it.
And I will. I'll tell them, like, if you read Mick Foley's book, which I highly recommend.
Right.
Right. He went to stories and threw himself into fucking dumpsters.
He didn't throw himself into dumpsters. He went to a park. He turned over one of the just random big aluminum trash cans.
Trash cans, yes.
And then he would flip, not flip over, he would hand plant on top of it. And then
so he would do, flip.
He would go ass over tea kettle and flat back bump when he came off the other side. That's it. That's how he would practice bumps when he was not in Pittsburgh.
And it was the same bump that he took when he took stairs, by description. Anytime he would take stairs and matches.
Maybe I'm not describing it well enough.
No,
he would just do a flat back bump on the grass.
No, which, I know, but he would
which use. Sucks.
Yes, he would hit it with his thighs in order to flip him over, and he'd put his hand on it to where it would make him front flip onto his back.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't think he would do the thigh smash. I think he would just run and use it like what do they call those in the Olympics? The horse.
The hurdle.
Yeah, where you plant. I think he would just go over it.
Yeah. Well, he.
But boy, I don't know where at what point in his career he invented the thigh smash over the stairs bump. Good yeah. God. Or yeah. or worse, being suplexed and letting your legs hit the corner of the stairs.
Yes.
Is yes. that not the worst?
It's insane. But I will mention that to people, and I'll tell them, like, you can go that route if you want to, but I wouldn't recommend it. You know, like, if you see Foley walking around, there might yeah. be a reason why he's, you know, a little gimpy.
Right. And yeah, the odds of you finding a maybe if you found like a golf course.
Yes.
go hit the green.
The AstroTurf.
At a public park, that grass is probably pretty lumpy, and you're going to land on a small rock, and you're going to have to go to the hospital.
Yeah, most likely. But it is something that I always recommend people to seek out education. You know, like inform yourself on why you're doing what you're doing. And there's some students that are at FSW that are very, very inclined to ask. And the ones that actually are asking me good questions, I'll be like, okay, well, watch this, read this, you know, listen to this, you know, and let me know what you think about it. You know, like, and there's times where I'll bring the watch a match, three matches from one person that you hate and tell me three positive things that they did.
Right.
You know, like there's moments where I try to get academic with them, but I don't do it at strain anymore because, like you said, you told, like, it would piss you off. It would piss me off too.
But I don't know that it would piss me off, but it would certainly make me look at them, you know, it would make me look at them as, oh, you're still a juvenile, even if they were yes. a fucking grown person. And you ain't ready yet. This is just right. fun. This is just fun for you. You know, it would be an easy way to separate the wheat from the chaff because they would do it to themselves. They would point themselves out as yep. I don't have what it takes to even fucking give a shit about anything in this industry. And
right.
the history of it is not only important to know just because of like knowing about etiquette and things of that nature, but like, knowing, I mean, any number of things, the business side of things and working and there's so much information out there that
yes.
you would, if you have a better understanding of the work of pro wrestling, like than the average person who just has moves, you have an edge on them big time.
Oh, absolutely you do. And unfortunately, and I'm not saying this for FSW, I'm saying this as the industry in a whole.
Right.
It's not the secret fraternity anymore.
No.
And you can't cast people out. You know, like anyone that walks through the doors of FSW and hands Joe DeFalco money,
they get right? to play.
They get a play. And I get them in the ring and they... Anyone that shouldn't be there ultimately will weed themselves out.
Well, I think that's what I'm ultimately getting at.
Right. It would be an easier way to weed them out for sure.
Yeah. There'd be less injuries.
But then that becomes an issue. You know, it takes money to keep the lights on.
Yeah.
You know,
and I'm not saying that if someone didn't do my stupid book report idea, that I'd go, well, there's the door. I'd just say, you've got some more time in the oven to be spending.
Oh, yeah. And I'm very honest when people need to go back in the oven, right, for sure.
Well, boy, Lita, I wanted to circle back to her. I think I read somewhere that the first three main events on Raw that featured women, she was in all three. So, boy, if that's not a feather in your cap, I don't know what is.
Oh, yeah.
And then on top of that, and I should really talk about her contributions as a sex pot, because it sounds like a strange sentence to say, but what I mean is, dude, she had, obviously her relationship with Matt Hardy was very public, and then ultimately the breakup and the adultery, although they're not married, with Adam Copeland, Edge, was very public. What's crazy is that Vince McMahon was like, let me book that match.
Well, but what is brilliant is that he said, let me book that match.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose you're right. That is the brilliant part. What's crazy is that they were professional enough to come together and go, all right, let's do this.
And everybody won in that. You know, I remember, and it's a shame because given the current state of the industry, what I hope for is I hope to see Kenny Omega and the Elite, you know, like defending their trios titles. And then all of a sudden here comes CM Punk and Ace Steel, you know, and they hop the guardrail and they start laying the boots and then it becomes this big ordeal. That's what I want to see on TV.
Brother, you ain't joking. For some reason, stupid me, hold out some shred of hope that, because the company technically hasn't said anything.
Yeah.
Maybe it's all a big work. That's fine. I'll forgive all parties involved.
Yep.
But whatever.
And if you go back and watch that and the match that they had, and I believe it wasn't a TLC match.
I think it was like a cage match, wasn't it?
It could have been a ladder match.
Because they had a few. It was really strange because it was, I think Matt Hardy, he cracked. I mean, he who can blame the guy? His super hot girlfriend completely cheated on him while he was home with a broken leg or whatever.
Yeah, not only that, but the fact it your super hot girlfriend that everybody in the world knows that it's your super hot girlfriend.
And by the way, yes, she sleeps around with your buddy.
Yeah.
God damn.
Yeah.
I mean, that's rough shit. And he completely came unglued. I've seen this in my personal life where somebody got wronged, but they turned into a fucking King Kong. Like, it's like, whoa, you can't fight that with this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where they just like, they started doing some wrong shit on their own. Mm-hmm. And he was eventually let go. So of course the fans are up in arms like, what the fuck? But then Matt Hardy comes back. It's a big surprise. They finally get that match. There's a bunch of receipts in that match. Good grief.
Oh, yeah.
And then Matt Hardy just sort of floated around. I'm willing to bet Vince McMahon was not in love with Matt Hardy 2.0. Like, because right. I sure as fuck wasn't. I was like, this is not as interesting as the Hardy Boys.
I enjoyed his stuff. I liked version one Matt, and I liked the little tiny Matt facts. I enjoy Matt Hardy's stuff.
Probably. I liked when he was an interdimensional demon from Mars or whatever. Yes. Whatever that was.
And I thankfully had the opportunity to train and spend just a little bit of time with Matt, and it was right as he was developing the Brother Nero stuff, and you could tell that he was just having a really good time.
Right.
And when I think that when I saw that, outside of my personal criticisms, we're talking about Ed Wood,
Right.
Right. You know, like we talked about Ed Wood earlier, and I loved it because I'm like, man, this like feels like a little campy. This feels a little bit out there. And then to see like the look on his face when he talked about it.
Right.
And the thought process behind it and things like that. And to see somebody that has sacrificed their body to the point to where they have gone through horrific car accidents that weren't car accidents. It was just him being booked in ladder matches against the fucking Dudleys. And, you know,
bro, he's got popsicle sticks for legs.
Yeah, man. But to see him happy and able to still perform and things like that, it was so earned to me. And I think that all three of them should be commended, you know, for going out and doing what
was right for the business.
Yes, not right for themselves. And sometimes you do have to think about the overall goal as opposed to what you want. And I think that that's something that hopefully, you know, if anyone's listening to this, which they're probably not, but, you know, it would be there'd be a lot of money to be made if Punk ended up like, give Ace Steel the run, man. Come on. Like, just let's
buddy, get it. I saw so we're recording the night of Dynamite, and the turnout in that building is not what I would consider impressive.
Yeah.
They've got a real problem over there running the same handful of markets multiple times a year. And it's starting to show on TV because those shots are starting to get closer and closer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They certainly need some big money shit going on over there, or they will slink away into TNA territory.
Well, and we'll see what happens.
Don't hold your breath. I will say that.
Oh yeah. Oh, I don't hold my breath for nothing no more.
Not you. I mean, everyone, the royal you.
Yeah.
Everyone.
All I know is I think that MJF has the opportunity to go on a really big run, you know, and I think that it would be great if there was bigger name players, but I think that MJF might be able to do some magic.
I think he's going to take a little time off, though. Hopefully he can get his part done in this Von Erich movie done and out of the way.
I don't have any information
have any information on the Von Erich movie.
I know nothing about the Von Erich movie. But from if I did know something about the Von Erich movie, I could tell you that they're moving along with filming very fast. Yeah. So
It also, if I knew anything about it, it looks fucking rad.
Yes.
But I don't know anything about it. Wink, 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 wink.
Yep. Oh my goodness. I can't wait till we can actually talk about that.
Hell yes.
Yes.
Big time. Well, you know what I didn't even bring up yet?
Hmm.
Maybe we should wrap on this. For two people who claim to be really uncomfortable performing a live sex act in front of an arena full of people, they sure look like they were having a fucking good time to me.
Absolutely. God damn,
that was the most erotic pornography with undercovers I've ever seen.
Hey now, Skinamax at its finest.
Buddy, I mean, if that was like a teenage me, you know, back when I was like a 14-year-old kid, we had that scrambled nudie channel, the Adam and Eve channel or the Spice channel.
Yep.
And you'd kind of casually see a boob and you'd go, ooh, I can handle a little business here.
Yep.
This was not that far off.
No, not at all.
With this live, I mean, it's pretty wild that Vince McMahon, I mean, it's not that wild for him. He lost his mind in the new millennium. He's just like, fuck it, let's do all this wild shit. And for him to go like, we're going to have a live sex in the middle of the ring. You know, I've seen a lot of fucking bad segments in that ring. You know, all the fake talk shows. Hey, welcome to fucking Dingleberry's Pit or whatever.
Yeah.
This one tops them all. Sorry, yes. Piper. Sorry, Brother Love and every other motherfucker in the ring having a fake interview chat show. I just want to see people fucking in that ring.
Hell yeah. Might as well.
With a big bed. I mean, they had a whole bed with velvet comforters and shit.
I'm sure like the thread count on the sheets was like over 800.
My God. And it's never been talked about. At what level of a work was it? You know what I mean?
Oh, man.
No, I'm saying I don't think there was penetration going on. But and I'm not saying he was licking her couch. Yeah. Sorry. There's no classy way to talk about this.
No, not at all.
But, you know, and also this. If you're going to be with a woman of that caliber, I'll say, and be in your tiny little underwears, Edge had very tiny underwears.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of a nervous boner?
Yeah.
I've been very impressed by his restraint.
Oh, well, who knows, man? That's one thing that I don't know if has been talked about other than the fact that they said it was a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, big time.
So I think that
it must have been uncomfortable for everyone in that fucking room. Like, Jesus Christ, this is wild. It's like watching like it's like watching I was about ready to say The Accused. That's not a good metaphor because that movie's about a rape.
Yeah. But
it's like being in a room. It'd be like going to a college frat party and two people were fucking in the living room. Like, yo, what the fuck is going on around here?
Absolutely.
Turnbuckle Boogie is a Diva Looter production and is produced by Timothy Styles and Cody Hancock, with web production and music by Timothy Styles. Follow the show on Instagram at Turnbuckle Boogie. And for merchandise, follow the link in the show notes to our Brainbuster Tea Store. See you next Monday.